Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking with Pete Haas. Pete is an all-around voice development guru, and he's done extensive development with Alexa, Google, and Bixby. He runs his own agency, Conversation Curve, and works for Verescape. Pete was just named one of the top 40 voice influencers on Twitter. And Pete is an overall great guy and someone I consider my friend. Please introduce yourself, Pete.
Greetings. My name is Pete Haas, and I've been building voice experiences for the last 16 years now. Over that time, I've created hundreds of experiences for companies like Nordstrom and Williams-Sonoma. And I mention that not to brag, but just to share with everybody that I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've made all the mistakes, and I hope to share what I've learned to anybody willing to listen. I started out as a web developer, but then in 2005, I started developing for voice on an IVR platform with using Nuance as our speech recognition engine. And the last 5 years, I've been really deeply involved in creating voice and conversational apps for web, Messenger, and the major platforms.
So Pete, you get defined as one of the OG OGs, right? So we think of voice and we often talk about, oh, I've been doing voice for 3 or 4 years. So I'm like, I've been in voice for a long time, but you've been in this IVR space and in voice for many, many more years. So I call people have been 3 or 4, I call them the OG. No, that's not fair. You're their OG OG way back to the IVR days, which is great.
Yeah, I have. And just to give some people's perspective who've maybe lived in the more recent era, it's a challenging technology to use because you don't have nearly the power that you have now. It's spoiled. But when we were building our original applications 16 years ago, you basically had to write the speech recognition grammars. So everything somebody would say, you'd have to predict ahead of time. This isn't the NLU. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just the speech recognition. To do things like even capturing a zip code, you'd have to ahead of time, all the numbers somebody would say and all the disfluency, if somebody would say oh instead of a zero, all that had to be worked out ahead of time. So they were not very intelligent systems. They worked well if you trained them well, but it made me really appreciate how to develop these things because there was a lot of love, a lot of time that goes into it.
That's interesting, Pete, because I look at the current state of NLU and having to provide training phrases and do that and think of that as pretty crude. But then you talk to someone like you and you're like, whoa, man, it's come a long way. It's much smarter and understands a lot more things than needing to, you know, include disfluencies in there. That just would be quite the task then to actually get an IVR up and running if you had to include all the possible disfluencies that you wanted to understand. So yeah. It puts everything in perspective, I'd say that. So Pete, it is so great to have you on and so great to talk. You and I go back to 2018. I think we were at the Samsung Developers Conference. Bixby was still in beta and they had this contest, or both in the contest. And it was just great getting to know you and talking to you. I always felt like two kindred spirits. We both in tech for a while, both dads, and both super excited about voice. So I'm just super excited to have you on the show, probably overdue, because I think you're one of the smarter guys I know in voice. And it's cool to have someone who's been through the tech grinder and done a bunch of different things in technology, and you get a good perspective on what's going on with voice. Yeah. But I want to go ahead.
I was just going to say, I do remember that event like it was yesterday. Yeah. You and I meeting for the first time, I think we knew of each other, but both of us presented in front of the legendary Adam Chire, which was, I mean, I'll be honest, I was a little freaked out before that because he was just such a guru in the space. But it was exciting. And I remember speaking with you the night before our presentation, and you were working with VoiceCraft, I think, at the time. So you weren't with Samsung yet. And you seemed to be just feeling the struggle of having a startup and everything. And I just remember you the next day, you won the contest, the $10,000 prize. And then, of course, soon after started working as the senior evangelist. So congratulations. And it's interesting to see how both of our lives have changed over the last 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People ask me how to jump into voice or how to get noticed. I'm like, go build something cool. And in this case, I did. And I won it. And that led to some conversations with Adam. And he's like, well, hey, apply, send me your resume. And boom, 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 right? And then I was working for him. So just get out there and get, like anything, get out there and get known and talk to people. Hey, but Pete, I want to talk about what's kept you in voice for making you the OG of OGs, right? So you've been, what did you say, 14 or 15 years? And that's your work at Veriscapes. Tell me what you do for Veriscape.
Yeah, that is, I would say, my day job. I've been doing it this whole time. So I've literally been making a living writing voice applications. So I'm proud to say that. What Veriscape does is we automate call centers, as you would imagine. So you call in and you want to make a payment. We're PCI compliant, so we can take credit cards over the phone. You want to check on your order, we can integrate with the third-party shippers like FedEx and tell you sometimes more than the call center agent can tell the caller. So that's our core business. But really the last 5 years, I would say, I've been really focusing on how can we take these new features that are coming out from the platforms and introduce them to an IVR platform. So things like speech recognition, NLU, we've rewritten our stack and we've integrated some of these speech features where it makes sense. So for example, we're getting rid of all our menus. They don't, and everybody knows this, right? That the tree structure of an IVR system, they're terrible.
Press 5 to shoot myself in the head. Press 6 to shoot again. Yes, I know. Well, what you're talking about.
And sometimes they exceed up to 10 and you're like, well, I can't remember that in my head. So breaking all that down and just introducing new use cases, even things that we couldn't do before we're starting to tackle, like a claim submission. Think in terms of before, if you want to do that, you would say, think of it like this. If you're on a website and you see a drop-down menu, what's your system you're having a problem with? And then what issue is it? And try to do that in IVR. That would be a terrible experience to the caller. But now you can just have a natural language menu. Hey, oh, I see you're calling about your warranty. What issue are you having? Please describe it. Mm-hmm. And then you're saying very natural. Oh, my air conditioner isn't turning on anymore. You know, very simple.
Yeah, I love that. And what I love about that is that the sexy part of any technology is on the B2C side. So smart speakers and enabling on devices. But often the real money is made in the less sexy, but more important B2B side, which is really where you're working there, is to say, hey, as a company, if I can actually answer the phone calls and not have it be that dreaded kind of menu assistant you're talking about, but answer it efficiently, it is a big, huge money saver. I have a background in retail, and I know when I worked in Gap Inc. and technology strategy, like every call to that a CSR answered was something like $12 or $13 or something like that. But if you can avoid that, there's real, real money behind that and those savings. To my mind, some of the real interesting and fruitful move forward for voice is exactly where you're working in your Veriscape is in that area. Because that's where the dollars and cents, at least right now, really are tangible. And that's very, very exciting for companies. And So if I call a Veriscape system, no menu then.
We're starting to introduce that. So it's not on every application, but the new ones we make, if you're going to say, hey, I need these 12 options, it's going to be a natural language. How can I help you? Please describe what I can do for you today. And just one more point, just while we're talking about Veriscape, there's this misnomer that we're trying to replace people. It's not always the case. What we're trying to do is augment what people do now. So they're very sensitive to cost. Obviously, it's a cost center for most businesses. And they're going to want the place and order calls. That's fine. They want those revenue opportunities. But there's a lot of things we can do. We call it treating the call. So we can identify, even if you're calling to place an order and that's going to be ultimately transferred to an agent, there's a lot of things we can do, answer a few questions. So when it gets to the agent screen, they're ready to help you complete your order. And they have all that context.
What you really do, to my mind, is, and I could go on in this, we'll get on to other conversations, but you really empower the agents, actually, to not answer the kind of mundane kind of questions that someone, where's my order, or these kind of things are really simple. So when you actually talk to an agent, it's a really fruitful, either it's a deeper problem, or you're absolutely right, the sales side. Because AI is no good at sales compared to any, even a decent human salesperson. Can do an amazing job. So to my mind, it really empowers the CSR agents to really kind of elevate their game and talk in more interesting ways or more fruitful ways, certainly on the sales side. Yeah. But exciting place to be, actually, because I think there's the innovation there touches all of us and has a lot of financial fruit behind it. But let me switch to what you do otherwise. So you run Conversation Curve, a voice design and development agency. Tell me more about what Conversation Curve does.
Yeah, I use it as a platform to speak about voice and conversational AI and everything in between. I find it's best to learn by doing. So I speak about these things after I've implemented them in some way. I've created a few capsules for Bixby and some skills for Alexa and even Google Actions over the last few years, really. I've really focused on making these things multimodal. I just feel like we're at this next step in the whole evolution, and we've moved beyond the hockey pucks or, let's say, screenless devices. And those are great for use cases like checking the weather or single turn things like a timer. Those are great, but I'm a little more interested in what you could do with the screen and what the use cases would introduce when you have a screen, whether it's on a mobile phone or a smart speaker or even on your TV getting cast.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's all about contextually what's the best modality. And you add voice as a new modality, and it's fabulous here, and it's not so great here. And so you add a screen and you can interact with it. And in my mind, voice, screen, touch, keyboard, mouse, like those all have a place. Voice adds exciting new capabilities there. But it's even more interesting and exciting, actually, sometimes to add voice into something and add it as new and then use the existing modalities for what they're good at. And then you get this amazing experience, right? Best modalities for the customer, best modalities for the situation. There. So speaking about voice, and you're talking about the smart speakers, the hockey pucks, as you call them. So what was your first, I was going to say, often asked first experience with voice. Wrong question for you. A modern voice assistant. What was your first experience with it? And when did you first get one?
A modern voice assistant. Okay. I will say, let me just go back and answer that a little differently. I remember, so I'm a child of the 70s. And so I remember, do you remember when the Speak and Spell came out, Roger? Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. And that was like a really cutting edge technology at the time.
It was.
From Texas Instruments. So the first time I could hear a robotic voice and I could type in, and I think at the time I was probably typing in swear words for it to say, because I was probably 11 years old. But that was my first introduction. And then even the movies like War Games, when he's typing, so he's not even using voice, but just typing to this computer, I just thought, wow, that just really made an impression on me. But I would say the first time I really used an assistant was, yeah, it was when I got one of the hockey pucks. It was, I think I was doing some hackathon and they were giving those things out like candy. So I got one and hooked it up, and it was cool. I would think for me, the main use case was play music. I thought, boy, that's the killer use case for that technology as it is.
Got it. So you got it, and it was a fun thing to play music and do that. And to my mind, even today, it's one of the playing media. Such an obvious use case for it, and one of the most obvious ones there. But now you actually do development for voice assistants. So tell me, when did you get started developing for voice assistants? And what was the first thing you built too? That's a great question.
Yeah, I was on this quest because from my day job, I was really focused on the ASR part. And they didn't even have these APIs out yet. So now you can go to the speech to text API through Google, or I think Amazon has one. Various other providers have these. So I was on this quest to, how can I figure out how to add that to our company? And I wasn't even thinking in terms of like the NLU yet. Like it was so nascent that wasn't even on my radar in 2015, probably. And so I went to this conference in San Francisco. It's called Signal Conference, sponsored by Twilio. And I saw these vendors for things that aren't even existing now. They're acquired since. API.ai was one. And just blew me away. And I thought, oh my gosh, okay, now I get it. If I can match this wonderful new advances in ASR and the NLU, now you got something. And of course, right at this time, Alexa opened their SDK, so you could start writing for that. And I immediately understood the whole intent model. So that was pretty clear. Mm-hmm. The first thing I wrote was a reading assistant, because at the time my kids were a little younger. They were in that grammar year, so they're really trying to learn to read, and it was a daily habit. So I just created a reading assistant that you could set a timer. So if you had to read it, let's say a half hour, you could say, hey, it was called Bookworm. Start Bookworm. And then when you're done, you could say stop Bookworm, and it would set, okay, you read for 28 minutes today. Congratulations. And, you know, save your page. Okay, it's page 28. So really simple, but mm-hmm. That was my first introduction. And then, of course, since then, I've written things that are publicly available, probably 10 different applications.
Awesome. So, Pete, you've been in this for a while, and there's a lot of people interested in jumping into voice. if someone came to you and said, hey, I want to get into voice, what would be your advice to them?
Well, if you asked me that a few years ago, it would probably be a more narrow set of opportunities you might have, especially even up to 10 years ago, a lot of the activity was really in the technology space, deep tech. They're trying to invent these things. But now in 2021, I would probably ask that person, well, what are you interested in? Where do you want to work in voice? Do you want to work kind of at the top of it, is in creating voice design and content for this? Or do you want to work in the deep ASR level, the low level guts of it? So I'd probably qualify it that way. And I'd say, just find something in that voice space that you can resonate with and that suits your attributes and your aptitudes.
Yep. Great answer. Yeah. I mean, go find what suits you well. And yeah. I will say myself personally, if someone's got any interest in design, I push them into voice design because that, to my mind, is one of our greatest areas of challenge. There are some great voice designers and there are not nearly enough voice designers out there. And we need a lot more work
this
there.
And so we've both been involved in the community. It's an interesting space because I've been through a few cycles with other communities. And one thing nice is there's so many women in the space. This is the first time in technology I can remember so many females being represented in a large way. And it's cool because I think this space is a really good blend of the art and the math. I always say that combination, it's the mixing of the two. I think that's what voice really gets right, where it's the design part, it's the technology and putting it together. It's not just one. If it was just math, we would all have it figured out already.
Yeah, you bring up a big important thing, and I've talked to guests about this, about diversity and voice, and the tech industry has been so horrible around diversity, both gender and racial diversity. And I do see some encouraging signs in voice, particularly right around gender. It's certainly way better than what I've seen in other parts of technology, which is definitely an improvement, but something to keep on pressing and make sure it happens. I certainly share your optimism, but also believe that we've got to put our foot in the gas around diversity and do that, because the tech industry has been notoriously bad about diversity and inclusion. So let's keep it going there. So you said you built 10 plus experiences. Tell me about a couple of things that you've recently built that you're particularly proud of. You were telling me about something that won a contest recently. So I'd love to hear about that. But toot your own horn. And maybe listeners, go try some of these out, because Pete is a very talented developer and designer.
Oh, thank you. I do appreciate this opportunity. Yeah. So the one you're referring to is called Shell Game. And it's exactly as you imagine, the game with the guy shuffling the shells. He's got a ball underneath it and you have to guess which shell. It's a really simple game. In fact, the voice input is trivial. It's just pick one, two, or three. So there's nothing really to the voice interactions, but I was really trying to experiment with the screen input. So everything you can do is it's touch, it's voice, it's all mixed together. That was fun, and introducing music in the background. And so it's just got everything to the experience you could expect. So it was my first game that I've ever written, which was kind of interesting getting into game mechanics. That's not something I've ever had a lot of interest originally in, but I can see how deep that is, how to think in terms of the psychology of the user. So that was that. That's fun. The one I probably would say I'm most proud of, it's one I wrote for Bixby first. It's called Guitar Teacher. And so what I tried to think of is what kind of domain could I create a voice experience in that I'm really interested in personally. So a few years ago, I play music and I learned how to play guitar in my 40s. And I learned through YouTube. I just would go on and search these videos. And of course, this whole time, you always have an instrument in your hand, right? So your hands are busy. So I thought, well, gosh, this is an opportunity here where it really would be truly a better experience if you could do it hands-free, to tune your guitar, to practice to a metronome, all those things you might do. So not even teaching yourself guitar, but for anybody that plays. So I created that for Bixby. That was the beginning of 2020. In the summer, I released it for Alexa. And so that's probably the one I'm most proud of. I'd encourage you to check it out. It's free. And you can, if you have a screen device, you can even search by voice on both Bixby and Alexa for whatever topic. If you like, if you're a fan, you can search for videos there and etc.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm a big fan of music and voice being together. No, it's so obvious what you're saying is, hey, it's obviously hands-free, right? My hands are on the instrument there, and what a great way to do it. I'm actually surprised that we haven't seen more of that, frankly, from both from music education And then quite frankly, in the music industry, right? Why aren't we seeing artists with a voice presence, right? You get this passionate fan base. I don't know, talk to your favorite artist here or listen to the snippet of their song that they just released on your voice assistant. I think there's such an opportunity there. It seems like an industry that hasn't jumped in yet, but grand opportunity. Someone's going to tackle it and figure it all out.
No, for sure. So that's, I've spent a lot of time and it's a deep topic. There's a lot of things you can do there. Just the content creation. So it's interesting that as a voice application developer, I find that in a lot of ways, I'm a content creator at the end of the day, whether it's other skills I've created where a lot of the work is done in the back end where you're trying to put all the data in. That's most of the effort. It's if you don't have an API to tap into.
It's funny because I was in a conference and I made this content slide, and Sarah Andrew Wilson, the Matchbox, loves that. And we joke back and forth about it because it's so true, is that you can spend a lot more time building the content than the actual development. And I think when you're doing that, you've probably got the right balance, because a lot of voice experiences can be relatively simple from a programming perspective. But the effort to create the content, especially since it's such a new medium, can be super high. And so focusing on content is always something I tell people. I've seen a lot of really well-developed applications, and then they threw together the content at the end, and it's, oh man, you did it backwards. I'd rather see simpler development, simpler app with beautiful content.
Right. And that's the one thing that could potentially differentiate you, right? It's that thing that you're putting, you're unlocking the value. If you can, let's say, learning an instrument is just the use case I'm talking about here, but think of in terms of every type of intent, every type of utterance you use for that topic. That's a very broad set of utterances that you could throw at that domain that would take me certainly years just filling all that out. So I've just been doing that. Just, it's not something I'm making money at. It's just something I enjoy. It's a vehicle to learn. And then I think eventually, maybe as these things get optimized for voice search, maybe there's opportunities in the future. So that's how I'm looking at that.
Absolutely. I would love to any of the voice assistants say, ask Alexa or Google or Bixby, help me play guitar. And Pete's guitar teacher should fire right up. That's the way it should work. But I think that's going to happen, actually. Hey, Pete, development-wise, I know that you're a big fan of Jovo. I think most of my listeners know about what Jovo is, but why don't you give them a brief overview of what Jovo is and then tell me why you love developing with Jovo.
Yeah. So if you haven't tried Jovo, this is a backend tool. So it's written, if you would like to write code in Node, so JavaScript or TypeScript, you can write a single backend for all your voice applications, and it will support Bixby, will support Alexa, Google, and many others. Those aren't the only ones. And so I know you've had Ruben and Jan on the podcast in the past, and I've definitely crossed paths with both of them. Super talented guys. And I know Ruben was working on this Bixby implementation for Jovo. And so that always just was in the back of my mind. Gosh, I got to try that. So maybe, I guess it was a few weeks ago, I started opening up their samples, and he had a little Hello World, and wrote a capsule called Spice Rack. And the idea of that is it's just an assistant. So it's not supposed to be a recipe app. There's plenty of those and they do a great job. My concept was, you'll see people like, who's the guy that yells at everybody? Is that Gordon Ramsay?
Gordon Ramsay. Yeah.
Okay.
He made a career out of chef and now yelling at people.
But you've seen him, and he'll go through and he's always teaching, and he'll say, oh, you got to add this and this. And I realized, oh, this guy, it's like back to first principles. Like, he knows how all these spices interact to the level where he doesn't need a recipe. He just knows, oh, cumin goes well with parsley. We're going to mix that on the steak. You're going to love it. And so I thought, okay, maybe there's a space for those type of people. So the idea is you would use it to say, well, what goes well for, I'm grilling a chicken tonight. What's good marinade for that? What spices go well with that? And so it's something you would refer to often. I built it first for Bixby, and then with the same backend using Jovo, I wrote it for Alexa. It's live on Alexa right now. I think we're still in submission with Bixby, so hopefully that will be out soon. And my goal is to release it for Google as well. So the same backend, it would just be released on all the major voice platforms.
So do you see going forward, are you going to build everything on Jovo, or is that the idea?
I think so. It makes sense for a lot of things. So certainly for handling the back and forth, persistence too. That's a big thing where you put a lot of time into your back end. And so you kind of want to leverage that same code base if possible. So yeah, definitely that's my tool of choice unless there's a reason to dissuade me from using it. I'll definitely default to that.
Got it. Yeah. And I know the Jovo guys have released new things recently. Like I think you can use Jovo. I know there's some integration of mobile apps and there's a particularly exciting to me. I think you can use Jovo on the web because I would love to voice enable the web. I think there's a lot of interesting things. I know Mozilla is doing some things around that, but it seems to not a lot of movement there, but hey, why can't I talk to a web page? Why am I not in front of a browser and I can't communicate with it, or I'm in a retailer site and I got to find something. Voice is great for finding things in one sentence, something that might take 20 clicks to do. Yeah, I think Joe, really cool idea, those guys. The sky's the limit. If you can put a conversational AI interface in front of it, on top of it, then Jovo wants to be your back end. So yeah, I'm a big fan of what they're doing. And hearing things around you doing more with it, inspire myself. You and I were talking about how before the podcast, now, the number of technology things we want to do is about a mile wide. And the number of things we have bandwidth-wise to do is much shorter than that. But you got to get inspired. It inspires me to go take a more look at Jovo. And if you're a listener, yeah, definitely check out what the Jovo guys are doing. Hey, I want to shift gears a little bit and ask you a few big picture questions about voice. I guess the first one is near and dear to the heart of many voice developers, which is monetization. And the challenges around monetization and voice, what's your view on where that is or where that should go?
I think there has not been a lot of movement in this space and the monetization front, and it's frustrating. I can see why there's a lot of barriers to that, but I do, it's just a prediction of mine, but I think in the next 18 to 24 months, you're going to see a lot of movement there. There's certainly a lot of efforts from all the platforms really to make that easy to transact through a voice assistant. I think you're going to see it more with really simple, reusable, small items. So I wouldn't buy a Lexus through a voice assistant, but I might buy maybe a Spice, maybe a refill of my toothpaste, or Kane Sims, our good friend, he'll say, I'll buy poop bags. Like, I don't care. Like, it's not something I need to even see. It's just a thoughtless exercise, but you want to be there to make that purchase at the time they're thinking about making that purchase. So for that standpoint, I think it makes a lot of sense. Certainly in voice ordering, I can see that, especially with the current health crisis going on. There's a lot of opportunity. I know there's a lot of people working on voice ordering. I think that's just a big field. I recently did a project with Magic & Co. So if you know those guys, they did a project for Vita Coco. It's the coconut water company, and they had a national campaign, and you could make a purchase through the skill of coconut water. And it was just a simple thing. I don't know if they did a ton of sales, but I think the idea was just to introduce these types of concepts onto these platforms. And it's a really nice experience because from when you're developing for it, what will happen is you'll initiate a payment. And then, you know, the platform provider will take that person through a flow, very similar to like a website where it will maybe go to PayPal or something else and then come back. Okay, it's complete. That's how the experience is now. It's a little, I would say for the developers, still a lot of friction to do it, but you can see that this is absolutely where it's going. I'm just encouraged to see when we start unlocking monetization, because then all of a sudden, somebody that's even at home writing apps for fun, they can potentially make money through affiliate links or things like that, where it's basically a sales channel for these companies. Mm-hmm. So I think there's, when that money starts coming, I think you're going to see a lot more innovation because there'll be budgets for it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So I assume the app is kind of promotional marketing. This is what we do. And this is our coconut waters and that kind of thing. Is that correct?
They had a twist on it. It was released on New Year's Day, and it was it was a hangover assistant, because coconut water, it has the electrolytes, and it's, you know, really good if you are in that state, let's just say. So the idea was you activate it and it asks you a series of questions and determines your hangover level. And then always at the end, it recommends coconut water, but it's just a funny kind of an engagement experience.
Awesome. I love it when companies, you know, a little sense of humor combined with a little sales sometimes makes something super cool. And then they let you complete the purchase. So why not? Yeah, I mean, there's a little friction. People aren't fully aware of it right now, but why not let that? I was actually thinking of your app, Spice Rack. What happens if it suggested, I don't know, I ask it about chicken and it says, if you use some oregano, and you're like, oh, I don't have any oregano. And you said, hey, I don't have any oregano. And it could say, hey, you want me to send you a sample or a partnership with a spice company? I love the idea of taking content. We're talking about content. And then using that to drive commerce. So people are enjoying their content, but they're like, oh, darn, I wish I had that spice. Or now, I don't know. The hangover thing is funny because I got a hangover now, man. I can't wait for it to come. But still, I love the idea of using the content to drive voice commerce in there and getting people more comfortable with it. So it can be any part of that. You're talking about the actual conversion, the bottom of the sales funnel. And I always think of voice as primarily that top kind of inspirational marketing area there. But yeah, people will get more used to it and will start buying there, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm just on the content side, Roger, to anybody that's a developer out there, I would just say, you know, really ask yourself that question. Are you truly providing value with this capsule skill or action you're creating? Because sometimes you're doing it maybe for yourself in the sense that it's really cool and it's really, really neat. And it's something you can use to maybe promote yourself. But is it something that somebody's going to really see value in, get some utility out of? Regardless of monetization, it has to truly be something they're going to use and then want to come back to. That's really hard. Think about the use case. Think about what could you add to this that maybe nobody else could or aren't in a position to.
Yeah. Oh, spot on advice for anything. And then how is voice unique?
Yeah, that's right.
And sometimes you see these things, and I'm sure you and I have seen them, where they basically took the mobile app and then built a voice version of it. I'm like, quite frankly, the mobile app is a better experience. So why would I use the voice? You know what I mean? Make it unique and fun and use the voice ecosystem for what it's good for. And not surprising. And this is where the evolution goes. First you copy and then you innovate. And we're largely in the era of people copying things right now.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see some innovation, which is exciting. But speaking a little along those lines, just kind of big picture question, what's working, but what's not working in voice and conversational AI right now? What's your big picture view of where the industry is?
Okay. I love this question. So I think we've we've really figured out a lot about modeling the language input. Whether you're typing it or saying it, we've got really good ASR. We've got really good NLU to do that part of it. But I don't think we're modeling the conversation as a whole that well. In fact, in some cases, we don't even consider that. You'll see tools from, I don't know if you've ever checked out or the audience, Raza. They're doing those types of things where right now you'll have, let's say, an intent, right? And you'll say, well, I'm 90% certain that this person wants this intent. But now take it to the next level and model the conversation as a whole. And then tools like Raza will say, I'm 90% sure this is the next thing to do in the conversation, which is really interesting. So it's very kind of goal-oriented, or I know Bixby does this well. Alexa Conversations does this. It allows the conversation to flow in a natural way. There's a correction and there's all these things to reground the conversation. I think that is a necessary tool in the tool belt that isn't necessarily fully there yet, but definitely going to be there in the next year or two.
Interesting. So Raza is actually making a suggestion for what the next utterance or the next kind of input might be, or the next thing the user might say. Is that what you're saying? Or
Well, I'm saying it's that, yeah, it's like anticipating what they might say. So it's literally taking, if you saw a flow chart of the conversation, it's modeling the conversational flow to say, if you're booking an airline or something, maybe that could take a few different paths. It will sense, I really think Roger wants to talk about this thing right now based off of what he just said before.
Interesting. So they're doing, that's really smart because I've long been, I said earlier, this whole idea of I have to model out and think of all my utterances. And you're absolutely right. Things like some things with Bixby's done, Alexa does with conversations, frankly, make that easier to do. But you're still thinking kind of utterances and intents and doing all that. And you still need to think, well, what's the possible ways someone could say this, right? Here's the 12 different ways, right? I've always been thinking, hey, the next step is really, why doesn't the AI tell me? Here's an example utterance. It's like, oh, well, here's 12 other ways that this might be said, and I'll take care of all those for you instead of making you program those 12. Or here's the next thing that might be asked, and I'll understand the different ways that a human might ask for that or say that. And so you get away from this kind of one-to-one kind of mapping from, okay, here's an utterance and here's an intent, or here's 10 different ways to say that same thing. And you let the AI does a better job of doing that. I think that'd be such an unlock for voice development. So now you added to my list of things. I got to go check out Raza. It's been on my list, but now you elevated it.
Yeah, check it out. It's certainly some really smart people working on that. And I would say the canonical example for what we're talking about here is think in terms of ordering a pizza. You might say, mm-hmm. I want a large pepperoni pizza. Oh, okay. You'd like a large pepperoni pizza. And then the next person, somebody says, well, how many does that feed? Which you right. might not have modeled that conversation that way, but there's some machine learning you can introduce at that layer that says, oh, I'm pretty sure they're asking about how many does it feed for the size of the pizza you want. And the next response would be 2 to 3 people on average. Now, would you like to complete that purchase? So you get them back on track. That's how I imagine it kind of going.
Yeah. So understand. So not only is that kind of the NLU being pretty sophisticated, there's a lot of contextual understanding that's yeah. needed to do that, to understand those very natural way of human asking is you break off and you ask something and then you go back to the flow. And yet we see people build these flowchart-like things. And it's, that's great until it's a yes or no question. Then they say, how many does it feed? And right. break. Sorry, I don't understand that is what you hear back too often. So
yeah,
bright future there. Hey, Pete, I work for Samsung and work on Bixby. So I got to ask you quite a question about that. And one of the things we're really working on is thinking about voice above and beyond the smart speaker, the hockey puck, as you were calling it, and thinking about it not only on phones, but really putting it on appliances and on TVs and just anything that's in your home would be voice enabled. What are your thoughts about enabling voice on these additional devices?
I mean, it makes all the sense, I think, to do that. It seems like just very natural. I think, Bixby and Samsung are so well positioned in that space because of the appliance footprint you have. I think it will take some time though, especially I think what you guys have, like that refrigerator is so darn cool. I just love when I've seen them at the SDC, but people don't buy refrigerators that frequently. So, you know, one of those is going to be in the wild and in a mainstream way. It might be a few years, I think, to introduce some of those things. Other things like on the TV, that seems like low hanging fruit, certainly. But I think it's at the point now where you're going to start talking to your device and then, realize it doesn't have a voice interface. I don't know if you remember a few years ago after the touch screens came out, everybody be touching mm-hmm. their screen and saying, oh no, right. this doesn't react to touch. So I think that's just going to be a natural input. So it makes sense that every device that has an interface will have some type of voice input. And frankly, it's a lot better in many ways. For example, if you're using an oven and it's Bixby enabled, wouldn't it be cool if you just say, turn the oven on at 350 or I'm cooking this dish and it knows, okay, well, that's 400 for an hour. But it kind of set these things because your hands are busy, right? You're in the kitchen. It makes a lot of sense to introduce these things. So I'm excited to start seeing these things in the home more and kind of blurring that line between what is a smart speaker. It's just, I think that independent device that's solely suited to do that, I think that kind of goes in the background and then all these microphones are just going to be everywhere and interacting with you in those IoT ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been living this reality a little bit because we're in the middle of doing some remodeling in my house. So I've been looking at appliances and things. And I've really been thinking about every time I see something that has 20 buttons on it, I'm like, you need a voice interface, right? And sometimes, or there's not enough, but you got to press this button 3 times and then press this button. And you're sitting there with a manual and trying to figure out. And every time you have to press multiple buttons or anytime you got to look in the manual, I can almost guarantee a voice interface and make it easier because I could probably describe in a sentence or two what I wanted. And yeah, I see huge opportunities there. And quite frankly, I've been living it, trying to choose these things. I want to voice enable every appliance I have. And I work for a company that does that. And even then, I've been a little disappointed that it doesn't do everything I want. Because I want anything that's a deeply nested kind of setting, I want voice enabled. Because then all I can do just ask it and I don't have to go. Because otherwise, you grab the manual. And once you grab the manual, you will introduced enormous friction into it. And so, yeah, bad usability when you got 20 buttons.
Yeah, washing machine. And there's small domains, right? You're not going to say everything to it. You're not going to say, put on a new Netflix movie on your washing machine, but you're going to say, wash some whites or something like that. And
understand. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm washing whites, and then it knows boom, 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 right? Or does all the settings for you. And the next I want a robot that then takes it out of the washer and puts it in the dryer and then folds it. I mean, that's coming.
That's next.
So speaking about voice and looking at it in general, what's your prediction for the next year or two? Where do you think voice is going to go? Or where do you want it to go for the next year or two?
I want just the adoption to take more hold. I think I've written a lot of skills and I've had good feedback from them, but it doesn't necessarily translate to people using them, or they might try them once. So what I'd like to see is people getting more in the habit. And I'm a victim of this myself. I don't necessarily use these things as much as I preach about them. I'm trying to make that so that I'm doing these things too. So hopefully, yeah, as far as the next couple of years, I think we're just going to see that adoption. I'm curious to see other players as this space evolves, like, what's Apple going to do, for example?
Grand question.
I think everybody thought 2 years ago they would have done something. Well, is it going to be the next WWDC? Maybe. I think if you can unlock the mobile ecosystem, that's, I think, maybe the next set of growth. Is that my?
It's funny because every time when it was WWDC is in June or July or mid-year, usually. I think it got COVID moved it, or it went virtual last year, and may again this year, I'm not sure, but I've been disappointed the last 2 or 3 years. Been like, oh, they're going to make a really cool voice announcement, and it's really going to be due, right? And because Apple is one of those companies, one, they often do things extremely well, but two, people pay so much attention to what they do that if Apple enabled you to do more interesting things with voice on Siri, it'd be really good for the entire industry because more people would start using voice. And they would do, and they're a great marketing company too. I share your hope that something happens there. We'll see. Yeah. And there's somebody else coming out of that we haven't even heard of who's going to build something amazing.
Yeah, that's true. I do think there's going to be some unicorns that come out of this industry. I certainly don't know who they are yet, but it's one of those things. I think when we get enough of the capabilities together, mobile was out a long time before the Ubers of the world came out, and maybe some of the capabilities of these platforms have to evolve enough so that you have enough of the features so that you'll get those next companies or use cases that. It's one of those things, it has to be 10 times better with voice so that you change your behavior. And I don't think we've had those moments where it's like, oh yeah, I'm never going back to the old way because this is just so much better. Or you start telling people about it. Did you try this thing? And like, that's when you got something. Mm-hmm. I don't think we quite hit that yet.
No, we haven't. But the promise is so tantalizingly close it feels that I think all of us, it drives a lot of us into industry. That's gonna happen. All right. Now let me ask you to rub your crystal ball and let's talk 5 or 10 years out. Get crazy. What are we gonna be doing 5 or 10 years out with voice?
I think 5 years, a lot of this stuff's going to be figured out. So it's going to be really easy to do things that we think now are hard. Multi-turn conversations will be, I think, not figured out, but you're going to see a lot of them in the wild, and people are going to be doing these on a daily basis. I think you fast forward to 10 years, I think maybe the interface starts to change where you introduce more of the AR ideas, which that's another industry that's so close cousin to us. I mean, we don't necessarily interact directly, but I could see this merging of an AR interface that uses voice for one of the inputs. I definitely could see that.
Awesome. All right. Well, then I'm going to hold you to that. I tell them I have to get a get together in about 5 years, you know, in 10 years, and we'll all look over our predictions and see how incredibly right or wrong we were and things. Yeah. We'll all do it over a few beers and have a good time doing it. So
sounds good.
Look for that invite. Hey, Pete, one of my favorite questions to ask guests is, aside from the voice experiences you built, can you share one or two other voice experiences that you really like and why?
These are kind of boring, but I will say I do use them. I do love Steve Arkanovich's Big Sky. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the best ones. And even Nick Schwab's Sleep Sounds, I do use that. It's just something that works. I definitely use those. They're maybe not so sexy, but they're great apps.
you know, it doesn't have to be sexy. It's that they both serve a need, right? And I've talked to both of them, and Steve has saw things lacking in the built-in weather applications, so built it. And then Nick has his famous story about the upstairs neighbor who is noisy. So he built, made his Alexa help him go to sleep. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, a lot of people like this. Kind of accidental happenstance, but now he's built a pretty thriving business out of it. So those are two great examples of things. All right. Well, wrapping up, if people want to keep in touch with what you're doing or what Conversation Curve is doing, what's the best way to do so?
I'm on social media as Pete Haas. You can certainly look me up on Twitter there, LinkedIn as well. But go to conversationcurve.com if you want to check out my apps that I've been working on. There's some examples and videos there if you want to just check that out. And get in touch with me if I just really want to just help bring the community forward. I'm always just kind of a happy contributor.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'll make sure we have all that information in the show notes. And hey, Pete, talking to you is really talking to a friend, and I like to say a fellow traveler in this voice industry. It's been amazing to catch up. I'm always excited to hear what you've been building and your thoughts about where the voice is going to go in the future. So thanks so much for having the conversation today and sharing with me and sharing with listeners. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it too. Thanks, Roger.
All right. Well, that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.